Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. Welcome to the HR Power Hour. For today's special show, it's year two of the HR Power Hour anniversary show, and I'm very excited to be here talking to you from News Talk WLOB Studios here in Portland, Maine. And I got to tell you, it's been a great second year as we gear up for year three of the HR Power Hour. I have to talk about our great sponsors first, because without them, this show would not be possible. Jackson Lewis Law Firm, AARP, Northern Insurance Group, Sheehan Finney, MaineHR.com, and JobsInTheUS.com. All great sponsors, and without them, of course, the HR Power Hour would not be possible. By the way, if you are interested in being a sponsor of the HR Power Hour, certainly go to HRPowerHour.com and let me know. We are broadcasting across the country now. We have had the website picked up in over 30 states, and we are certainly broadcasting worldwide via the internet. And we are very excited about the growth and the possibilities of the future. I have to thank everyone that listens to this show as well. HR professionals, business leaders, I hear from you all the time when I go to events, when I go to shows. You tell me to keep getting this information out there. We've really become an educational show, and I'm very excited about providing this information and data to all of you so that you can go out there and run your businesses and to show how important HR is to important growth in an organization. It's all about the people. The product is important, but it's about the people, and that's what makes it work. So again, thank you very much. We're ending year two on a high note and getting ready for year three. So what I'd like to do today, because it is a special show, I'd like to do a little bit of a recap of some of the highlights in 2013. We did this on the first year anniversary show, and I got feedback that it was a really good success, and I'd like to be able to do that here for you today. So I'm going to take you back to July 2013. We had a lot of great guests on that month, but it started with our anniversary show, first year, of course. It was on the 14th of July. Then we had a great series of guests having to do with employee volunteerism. They were Janice Rogers, Judith Stark, and Ruth Lund. And they were all talking about employee volunteerism, which is so critical today for employees to get out there and be part of the community and make it happen. The second show we aired, which was on July 27th, really talked about Maine Development's Foundation 2013 Jobs Report. We had Maggie Drummond from the Maine Development Foundation, and John Doerr. He's a senior advisor for Jobs for the Future. And they had this to say about jobs in 2013 and what the future trends would be. You know, it's interesting. We just had a great segment talking about the need for education and employers to really get together and talk and really figure out what it is that is needed. And Maggie, talk a little about one of the programs that's already begun that process. And then John, I know you had some really strong feelings about how we can, you know, what we should be able to do and why we should be able to do it. So go ahead, Maggie.
Certainly. Maine Development Foundation has been running a leadership program for the last 20 years called Leadership Maine. And last year we partnered at the urging of our friends at Unum and in partnership with the Maine Principals Association with some support and guidance from the Department of Education. We started specifically a Leadership Maine program for administrators in the K-12 system. And the program was designed to help administrators as they begin to think about this transition and implement this transition to a standards-based system, to increase and grow their leadership skills and to help connect them more directly with employers and with what's going on in the Maine economy and how we need to prepare our students as they come out of the K-12 system. So we had a full class of 35 administrators, which is superintendents and principals. Last year, we have another full class this year. We've had a waiting list, and we've literally taken these administrators around the state to visit with major employers to talk about what the K through 12 system may need to do to work in a more coordinated way with our employers here in Maine. It's been a very positive experience for us. We think the administrators are getting a lot out of it, and the employers are ecstatic to be able to talk about what they need and how we can all work together to make it happen. So we plan to continue the program, and any administrators out there listening, please contact us. We'd love to talk to you about it.
Well, you know, as a Sigma class, Leadership mm-hmm. Maine alumni, it was a great program, and I highly encourage individuals out there who are looking for that type of education to get that, because it's great. John, talk to us a little bit about, you know, you mentioned mm-hmm. during the break that yeah. we, you know, what it is that we really should be looking at yeah. to do. So go ahead, tell us.
Well, I think we've had a lot of polite conversations around the subject, and it hasn't moved the needle very much. I think we need to get empirical. I'm a numbers guy. I get much more value out of seeing empirical evidence and driving decisions with it. And so I think institutions that are graduating students today who are workers the next day into the labor market should be obligated 6 months, 12 months down the road to follow up with employers, find out how individuals are performing. Not as an anecdote, you've got plenty of anecdotes around, but as a systematic effort that gives us some strong empirical evidence to see whether, in fact, the students and the graduates coming out of our institutions are meeting the tests and the requirements that are set forth in the workplace. And then if they're not, what is it that we can do by way of this kind of collaboration to strengthen our curriculum, to help students make better choices? I think those are very technical and practical things that we have to do, processes that we need to engage in to ensure that ultimately the product responds to the needs of the market and is, in effect, everybody better off, you know.
No, and I think you're absolutely right. And that would be a very interesting test if somebody would do that, because I think it would be an eye-opener, maybe, for some of the universities yes. in terms of what actually is happening out there. I did want to bring up a little bit of a shift in subject, but this talks a little bit about Maine specifically. There is this talk of two Maines, rural Maine, if you want to call it, above Augusta, maybe above Bangor, or maybe even above Portland sometimes, people will say, and the southern half of the state. Talk to us about your report in terms of how it differentiates between the two, if it does, and some of the challenges that are faced up in Washington County versus maybe York County.
Yeah, in places like Washington County, Northern Penobscot County, Arista County, Oxford County in the West, we once had very strong, robust mill economies where we literally employed thousands of Mainers in the mills. We paid exceptional wages. There was a supporting industry in the woods that provided the raw material input for those mills. And we enjoyed a pretty strong economy in those places. That has literally imploded on us. When you take a look at the employment numbers in those mills, when you take a look at what's been happening over time to the numbers of workers there, dramatically reduced. Dramatically reduced, even though the level of output oftentimes in terms of paper production has held up relatively high. There's been huge, huge increases in productivity in that industry. But the casualties are workers, often workers in their 50s. That's all they ever knew. That's the life that they lived. They lived it well. All of a sudden, they're stranded. And they're stranded because once that implosion affects them, they can't sell their house. They can't dump their assets and move on to greener pastures. They've got to figure out how to cobble a living. And I have some real compassion for people in Maine who are stuck and trapped in that kind of a reality. I mean, there's been some efforts to help people reskill and retool, and you hear the anecdote about the Millinocket paper worker who got a degree in nursing at the University of Maine and went on to a new and different life. But that's often few and far between. I think we've got a real problem, and we've got to figure out what's our rescue strategy, what's our salvation strategy to kind of basically help people keep their head above water in those very, very troubling kind of circumstances.
Has MDF looked at that in terms of what they think are some of the ways that can be helpful to the rural parts of the state?
It's not something that we specifically have programs working on right now, but certainly we see a good example of an institutional response to providing education and training in rural Maine is the university college system. This is really the rural outreach system for the university system statewide. These are the places where offered throughout the state where folks may be able to plug into degree programs through video conferencing or some other technology that would allow folks to stay where they are but receive the education or training that they might need to do something else. So it's, it hasn't been a focus of ours, but we do see some of that programming focused on that issue.
So talk to us about the challenge because of the aging population and the adults. You know, what do we do with them? When especially we get this problem in their 40s, 50s, 60s, mm-hmm. gosh knows that, you know, we've seen it. How do we solve this problem?
We see some opportunity presented by the number of adults in Maine who have some college experience but didn't finish a degree, for example. We have, according to the census, over 200,000 people in Maine who started but didn't finish college. And we're working right now to help those folks plug back into the educational system in a way that allows them to potentially transition in their career or move up within the same company that they're working for now. If some small percentage of that 200,000 people in Maine were to go back to school or get additional training, that's a real boost to the workforce in Maine, and we see that as an opportunity in terms of our population.
John, your thoughts?
Yeah, I worry about those adults who have done everything right all their lives, all their working lives. You know, they had relatively low skill levels, maybe had a high school education, worked in manufacturing. All of a sudden, there's no longer any call for that work. They're in their 50s, moving from the factory floor into a call center. That's a huge paradigm shift in terms of skill requirements. And I think we need to appreciate more deeply the enormity and the stress that's associated with people having to make those kinds of leaps. And so mm-hmm. programs such as the Maine Development Foundation is promoting, I think we need to expand and recognize that people in their 40s and people into their 50s, they're not done yet. They can't hobble their way to the finish line. They need to make a living, and I think we have a real responsibility to help them in that direction.
Blooper.
Well, let's talk a little bit about as the change.
Restate that.
I need sleep is what I need. That's all I need.
I'm so glad the Sox won.
I need sleep. And I know that's going to be on a blooper somewhere, Deb. I know you're going to save that
for
me.
Well, now I just might. Yeah.
I know. Uh-huh. Okay. Next, we go into August 2013. It was creating a Best Places to Work organization. We had Chris Arsenault for New Balance. We had Mark Holmes from Health Coaches Incorporated, and they talked about how to create a great organization and a best place to work. We then had Amy Volk, who came in and talked about HR legislation. I think the surprise there was how few HR professionals and business leaders actually call their legislature. And she had this to say about it. You know, it's important that HR professionals, business leaders, understand the legislative process. I'm not sure all of them do, and I'm not sure that there has been a, you know, a constant effort to try to get them to connect with the legislature as much as they probably should. Talk about some of the efforts that are being made and maybe why it's important that these reach outs are happening.
Yeah. Well, I think you're right, and I think that professionals and business owners don't understand how easy it is actually to communicate with their state rep or their state senators on issues that will affect their businesses and their jobs. And it is very important. Of course, businesses in this state are represented by the Maine State Chamber, and they sort of represent business interests in general. But they're only one voice in the State House. And when it comes right down to it, there are a lot of other voices that often drown out that one voice speaking for businesses. I should also say that the National Federation of Independent Businesses has, they have a representative in Augusta who is there frequently as well, representing independent businesses, smaller businesses. And then there's the Restaurants Association and the Innkeepers Association, the tourism industry. But the rank and file businesses owned by Mainers, particularly small businesses, I think really should take the opportunity to make their voices be heard, because we hear from the Maine People's Alliance, which is a very, very powerful sort of social activist organization. We hear from the unions way beyond the number of people that they actually represent in the workforce.
When you're talking about number of business people that actually contact you or contact members of the legislature, give us a number. Is it a surprise if you get two calls? Three calls?
If I got 100? Three calls on an issue, I would be surprised. Yes.
Really?
Absolutely.
Do you think that is? Is it just because that people feel that they can't have a voice, or that all hope is lost? Or, you know, why is that?
That could be part of it. It could be somewhat, I'm a Republican, so they feel that I'm going to represent business interests well. But I don't think that's it. I think that most people think everybody else is doing the work. And when it comes right down to it, it's sort of the restaurant nobody goes to anymore because it's too crowded. You know, nobody contacts their state rep because everybody else is doing it. Guess what? No, they're not. You know, we hear from organized efforts. I get quite a few form emails that have automatically been sent often on behalf of somebody, and they may not even be aware that the email was sent, or they may have clicked on a button without even realizing that that was going to send me an email. And you can discern those really quickly. And they are practically ignored. I don't want to say completely ignored, but if you couldn't take the time to write a sentence or two yourself about an issue, then it's probably really not that important to you. But yeah, to hear from two or three businesses from my district on an issue, say, for example, on the minimum wage hike, it didn't happen. You know, and I know that they're opposed to it, but if I, you know, stop in and ask, hey, how do you feel if we make you have to increase minimum wage to your workers by, you know, 50 cents or a dollar an hour, they would say, I can't afford that. But a lot of times they're busy running their businesses.
I was just going to ask that question.
Yeah.
And that is one of the challenges. Look, I own a business. We know that. You own a business. We're doing our thing. Right. We're out there doing our day-to-day work. And so you hear it on the radio, you hear it on TV, you hear about a bill, and you go, okay, oh, well, that would be bad.
Yep.
But I'm too busy. I got things to do, and they don't. And you just don't pick up the time. Or maybe I'll call. And then something happens, of course, and you just don't.
Right.
And there is the feeling that it won't help anyways. You know. So I guess my question is, in this case, how can you explain to either HR professionals, business leaders out there, that it really does make a difference? Can they actually sway a vote? Can they make you think about a decision? Because I think that's also part of the fear, is that the party line will do the party line, right? And either Republican or Democrat, mm-hmm. or either independent, will just vote a party line. How do we fix that and tell people that it's actually something that could actually be changed, a decision maker to make somebody make a different decision?
Yeah, that's a big question. I can only speak for myself and say that hearing from a lot of people on an issue definitely would influence, particularly if they're from my district, you know?
Right.
That the voice, if it's outside of my district, I don't hear it quite as loudly. But to hear specifically from people within my district about a specific issue does make a difference.
Blooper.
For you, Deb, I'm always ready. Simplicity, please. We have fun. Can you tell?
I can tell. This is awesome, actually. This is fun.
This is going to be a blooper.
Oh, I'm sure it will be. Because you know, I know you. But then we had Katie Rand from Pierce Atwood come in and talk about Supreme Court decisions. These were three huge decisions that affected HR, and they affect us still today. So that was a great topic, and I encourage you to go back and check out her interview on August 24th, 2013. Then we spoke with Kathy Kilroy from the Mentor Group, and she talked about mentoring and how important it was that mentoring happens in your organization. She had this to say about what it can do for your organization. So it starts really at the top. There has to be an organizational analysis done that says this is something we need to do for our organization, for our people. This fits into our talent development strategy, and it has to become a key business priority, correct, for the organization?
That's correct. And you know, and it shouldn't be a standalone. It should be integrated and part of a complete talent management process.
Now, do you find that when an organization first looks at mentoring, that they're trying to determine, A, how to maybe transfer knowledge from an older generation to a younger generation, to transfer maybe knowledge from a younger generation to an old generation, maybe from a technology standpoint? Or do you find that there are other ways that you really see mentoring being used?
I think those are both very important reasons. I think the top three reasons our clients are implementing formal mentoring programs typically, and this has shifted, but the number one right now is to help build the leadership and succession pipeline. So there is that focus on growing future business leaders, getting that knowledge transferred. I mean, when we look at all the demographic information in the marketplace and the number of baby boomers who will be exiting organizations over the next several years, you know, they want to fill that pipeline and develop that. So that's the top reason. The second reason is to support recruiting, retention, and engagement activities. And that's a huge one, especially for large organizations trying, you know, to compete for top talent and young people coming on board. And the third is usually around diversity and inclusion initiatives. And we see that particularly with our manufacturing clients, where they're trying to build, you know, more diversity in their leadership pipeline, women in particular. And so mentoring is a very effective strategy to do that.
Blooper.
This is an HR professional show, Debbie. So I know you're taping me for bloopers, but let's remember, it's an HR professional show. So if anybody's an HR professional and wants to do the show, let me know. September brought some great guests on the HR Power Hour. First, we talked about federal and state requirements with Julie Rabinowitz with the Maine Department of Labor. Then we brought in two guests on September 14th. First talked about a new product called BidRx, and Neil Kusin talked about it as a new benefit for employees. Then Hank Christensen came in and again talked about Consult-A-Doctor, a way for companies to save money when it comes to having their employees use a different way to get a hold of a doctor when there is a non-life-threatening situation. Great topics. New cost-saving medical tools. That was a great show. Then we talked to Tom Dowd, and he talked about professional development. And he's from the Tom Dowd Professional Development and Coaching. He had been out of a job, and he came back and showed how he made it happen. Then we spoke to Patrick Riley, and he's the CEO and founder of Modern Survey. And he talked about the company and how surveys really make a big difference when employees are listened to and they are engaged with. Finally, we wrapped up September with three great guests, and they are Lori LaChance, president of Thomas College, Dr. James Libby, academic dean, and then Lucy Campbell Pelsma. And they all spoke about Thomas College's success in the business community and how it makes a difference for that bridge between higher education and employers. And that was some of the challenges facing higher education today.
Blooper.
Which I have no idea what it's going to be.
But you need to say something again because you refer to our listeners tuning in every day. And they don't tune in every day.
Can you just take it out?
Yes, I can. Yes. That would solve it all. I will just
delete.
Take it out.
It's called delete.
Delete the
delete.
Button. Hit that delete button.
For all you who don't know, we delete around here a lot. October 2013, we brought in Kevin Lewis, and he talked about new insurance plans and how the Maine Community Health Options was bringing in a new health insurance plan into Maine. That was very interesting. Then we spoke to Dan Rose from Drummond and Woodsum, and he spoke about privacy and how, you know what? What is really private in an employer's domain? Our cell phones? Our public spaces in a private area? How about your cubicle? How about your desk? Very interesting topic. And he had this to say about privacy in the workplace.
First of all, expectation of privacy, there's just a personal creepiness level. Now, legally, when we're talking about employment, it's not just your personal view, but it's where would a reasonable person have an expectation of privacy? Like, put this back on you. You walk into an employer. Let's talk about an employer saying, hey, turn out your pockets. I want to see what's in your pockets. That feel like that's a private area to you?
Well, you know, it's interesting you say that because I come from a retail background. So I used to work for Levi Strauss, American Eagle, Pacific Sunwear. Mm. It was very common that we would ask people to open their bags, make sure that their pockets were, you know, didn't have anything for jewelry or anything. But it was done on a consistent basis to every single person. So it was done in a way that it was okay to be done.
Was it done to customers or to employees?
To employees. Okay. To employees. And it was consistent across the board so that if you left the store and you had to leave, you always had to open your bag, show what you had, make sure your pockets were clear, and then you would leave.
Well, that's a really interesting point because it relates to where you work, right?
That's right. It does.
We're working in a diamond mine in Zaire. You know, we're going to look in your pocket.
I mean, think so.
We're going to be checking this stuff, yes. And maybe even beyond your pockets. But if you are working at a law office, if you're working in manufacturing and you're building cars, what am I looking for when I'm looking in your pockets? Let's get out of the pocket issue, right, and talk about, you know, your purse. So you've got a purse. Are you when you look at my purse, right, and let's say you're looking for a good pair of jeans. Mm-hmm. Are you going to find a good pair of jeans in my purse? And if you look in the purse and you find little smaller containers of stuff, which may have personal
items,
natures,
yep.
I'm uncomfortable right
yep.
now just to say
That's
it.
Right. But you're right.
What do you know, do I have an expectation you're not going to open that? I mean, I don't know about you, but I think the answer is yes. And that's just the purse and the pocket stuff. Let's start talking about, you know, your iPhone or your you know, whatever kind of smartphone you have or a tablet or a computer. I mean, do you have an expectation that, hey, you know what, that's my phone. It's got my, you know, relatives on it. It's got all this stuff on it. You know, I'm walking out. Let's take your example. I'm working for retail, and I'm leaving at the end of the day, and my boss says, hey, David, come over here. Of course, they'd be saying Dan, since that's my name, but whatever, because that would be one sign
yes.
that there's an issue
yep.
with my relationship with the employer. But
I think so, yes.
But they say, hey, come on over here, and I walk over, and they say, you know, I'm kind of interested in what's going on. Let me see your phone, right? I think that you have an expectation of privacy that's my phone.
Blooper.
From Drummond and Women. Drummond and Women. Ha! That's funny. In October 2013, we continued with communication skills from Jennifer McGlure. She's the president of Unbridled Talent. She talked about the key to communication in an organization. Then we talked to a good friend, Charles Wilkinson, the principal at Human Resource Management, and he gave an update on the EEOC and OFCCP guidelines for government contractors and subcontractors. This was really timely and critical information, and it really helped us understand what is needed in regards to those new regulations. We then head into November 2013, and we started the month with an investigation topic with our good friend Peter Lowe, a show favorite from Braun and Isaacson. He talked about how investigations are critical when they're done right to an organization. Then we spoke with two great guests the next week on analytics and executive personal treatment. We spoke to Cecil Hobbs. He's the SVP of Marketing and Business Development for Activate Networks, as well as David Martinez. He's the manager and tax accountant for Baker Newman & Noyes. He talked about what you would call concierge services that really give corporate executives the premier treatment and how that can really help you and your organization. We ended the month with team building and a little bit more about mentoring. We spoke to John Brubaker, or Coach Brew as he's known, and we talked about how team building is critical when you really want to get an organization moving forward. We then spoke to Susan DeGrandpre from Collaboration Consulting, and she talked about corporate mentoring and how within an organization it is key to ensuring that mentoring happens to get age differences to work together in terms of generational differences, as well as really moving ahead with growing and retaining great talent. We kicked off the month of December We brought back Tom Dowd, and he talked about how he got his new position. And he really brought to home what it takes to find a job in today's world. We then spoke to Colin Van Oster, and he's with the College of America. And he really had a new idea, all online courses that are affordable for organizations to pay for so that their employees can get a degree in a reasonable rate of time and all online. We then spoke about value-driven organizations, and we spoke to Phil Clothier, and he's the CEO of Barrett Value Center. He, along with Ruth Lund at Legacy Supply Chain Services, talked about what is a value-driven organization, how it really makes a difference when you align the values of the company from top to bottom, and how it really can make it happen for your organization. We then kicked off financial planning and hiring in rural areas. We spoke to David Blaze. He's the president of Retirement Planners International. And he talked about offering outplaced candidates a solution to their problem of what do I do now when I don't have income coming in and I don't want to make the big mistake of either cashing in my 401k. What are my options out there? We then talked with Hook Wheeler. He's a senior HR manager at the JAXA Laboratories, and he talked about the difficulties of being in a rural location and sometimes not being able to find the right talent needed because of where the organization is, even when you have a world-class organization. If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
They say it's never too late to be what you might have been. So if you want to turn your passion into your profession, AARP can help you find new opportunities that take advantage of Work Reimagined, a program that leverages the power of LinkedIn. AARP also provides access to tools, resources, and information that can help you at every step. Just a few of the ways AARP helps turn your goals and dreams into real possibilities.
AARP, real possibilities.
Go to aarp.org/possibilities to find tools and guidance.
Real Possibilities is a trademark of AARP.
You might hear some advice from your friends on choosing a health plan.
Darling, you must choose the gold healthcare plan.
Not the silver plan. Too much trouble. Do they have a stainless steel plan? I like bronze, like my tan. Are sunburns covered? Instead, take advice from a licensed agent from Northern Insurance Group. Meet face-to-face with a local healthcare exchange professional. Call Northern Insurance Group today. We have the resources to make sure you make the right choice.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
Bloober.
And she is from, she is the director of Kandamanamoma.
That was a good blooper.
It was. Oompa, 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 oompa. And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com. In January 2014, we kicked off the new year, first with some great new sponsors, and second, with our new HR certification program discussion with Linda Anguish. And she is the director with the HR Certification Institute. And we talked about new HR certifications through SHRM. Then we spoke to Lori Parham. She is the Maine State Director of the AARP. And just for all that you should know, in June of 2014, I turn 50, and she is threatened to come to my house to ensure that I join that great organization. And I might add, as a sponsor, I think I'm probably going to have to. Then you know what? We had one of our highest rated shows ever. And I am very proud to say that Deborah Weiss Ford from Jackson Lewis holds that honor with The Jerk at Work. We all have one there, and she had this to say about The Jerk at Work.
If you did a cost analysis of the amount of time that it takes to deal with a jerk, I think that you would find it to be astonishing. The time that not only HR, but the time employees spend complaining, the time that you spend in meetings and on emails correcting bad behavior is really remarkable. I mean, in this book that Sutton has published, he goes through a cost analysis for one particular employee for a year-long basis, and it costs something around $160,000 a year for the time spent, the downtime spent dealing with bad behavior at work. So oftentimes it's a cost analysis issue because some people who are the jerks at work are really very talented. They're very bright people, very creative people, and employers will often keep them around because of the benefit that they give. So I think in a lot of ways you need to do a cost-benefit analysis to figure out when the jerk at work is costing more than he or she is worth.
Blooper.
And we're back, and you're on the... This is going to be a blooper. You can tell. Yeah. Then January 18 of 2014, Matt Ricks, a national speaker, came on, and he talked about yes. That's right, yes. How do you get somebody to say yes? I think we all learned a lot from his talk. We then spoke about the wilderness of healthcare reform, the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare. And on January 25th, 2014, Jason Allen, president of Northern Insurance Group, another great sponsor of the HR Power Hour, talked about some of the challenges and some of the things that are going on with healthcare reform. February 2014, we started off with FMLA issues. We had Anne-Marie Story come on, and she talked about some of the challenges. Here's what she said about the FMLA and the challenges employers face.
First of all, there are huge differences in what is required by each of these laws in terms of accommodation and return to work. There is no accommodation requirement under the FMLA. So at the end of the employee's FMLA period, they must return to their same original job without needing restrictions or changes to the job. They must be able to perform all aspects of the regular job at the end of their FMLA period. That is very different, of course, than the ADA. And most importantly for employers, it means it does not mean that an employer can just terminate somebody when their FMLA is up. And it seems like I talk about this all the time because the inclination is, well, the 12 weeks have gone by, they can't come back to work, so I'm done, right? And I can just send them a letter saying, you know, we're finished. But that is not the case. There is no question that if the employee has a condition that qualifies as a disability under state or federal law, then at the end of the FMLA, the employer is still charged with determining whether or not a reasonable accommodation can be made for that person. And that reasonable accommodation could be extending the leave period. So even though they've now been out for 12 weeks of FMLA time, it's entirely possible that they will get or be entitled to some additional leave time as an accommodation. And so that's really the primary difference. Another major difference is that the FMLA, the reason why it's so protective of employees is because it absolutely guarantees a restoration of the employee to their regular position, ideally, or to a position that's equivalent in all ways. And so during the period of the FMLA time, the employer must either keep the job open or at least fill it only temporarily until the employee is either ready to return or the time runs out and they can't return. Now, that's different under the ADA, because if you've got somebody out with a disability, ideally you want to try and keep the job open as an accommodation, but there's no absolute requirement that you do that, and in fact you could move somebody to a different kind of job that better fits their needs and as an accommodation. So that's another major difference.
Blooper.
Second, we're going to talk to Dan. Don't have his last name. Oh, my.
Let's put that right into the music. Yeah.
I'll start over completely. Then we brought on Todd Churches, and he's the CEO of Big Blue Gumball, and he talked about visual thinking. And believe it or not, it was an amazing show. He talked about some of these challenges when you're really out there thinking about of how to think of things in a different way and to visualize the mission you're on. Then we had two great guests that talked about corporate wellness and negativity. First was Lisa Jing, and she's the CEO and founder of Synergy at Work. She talked employee health and corporate wellness. You know what? That's an important topic. And then Dr. Amy Wood, the author of Life Your Way, came in and talked about navigating negativity in the workplace. We all face it sometimes. We ended the month with wage and hour update from our good friend, Mark Ventola, from the Employment Attorney's Office at Sheehan Finney, Bass and Green, another fantastic sponsor here at the HR Power Hour. We go into March 2014, and we kicked it off with retaining top talent. Our good friend Mark Isaac talked about 7 slight edges to getting and retaining top talent. They were great tips. We then spoke to 2 guests. The first one was Mark Gurr from Gurr Corp, and he talked about company intranets and how they can help HR professionals. Then we spoke to international speaker Nancy Kosick from the Academy of International Protocol and Etiquette and how to deal with lines of casualness. That was really a great topic, and so we brought her back in following months. And then we had our good friend Peter Greenlaw talk about why diets are failing us. People wondered why that would be an HR topic, and he really brought it home when he talked about how this deals with wellness within companies and organizations. We then ended the month with, again, a great friend, Don McPherson of Modern Survey, and he talked about pay and benefits as now being stronger drivers for retaining great talent. And he had this to say about how that all plays out in 2014.
Compensation and pay is becoming more important to employees, and this is according to a study that we conducted at Modern Survey in September of 2013. What we found is that there are 6 common or 6 drivers of employee engagement, and they're typical things like the ability to grow and develop and recognition and personal accomplishment, but the satisfaction with fair pay showed up as the 5th strongest driver of engagement. And what we had seen the previous 3 years or post-recession is that pay and benefits were not appearing as drivers of engagement. So that's one very important thing that HR leaders and business leaders need to understand, is that people are becoming a little bit more pay conscious than they have over the past 4 or 5 years. The other thing that's really important to this conversation is that satisfaction with compensation and satisfaction with pay is falling, and dissatisfaction is growing. So we ask a question on the study, my compensation package is competitive in our industry. And in 2011, 58% of people responded favorably to that question. In 2013, it's only 53%. So it's fallen 5 percentage points. And that's a significant difference. But even more shocking or more important for people to understand is that the unfavorable responses rose from 21% unfavorable in 2011 to 25% unfavorable in 2013.
Blooper.
Keith is going to be talking about how... No, that's about enough right there.
Okay,
stop.
Good.
That was it. Let's stop right
good.
There.
Yep,
that
I like it. Oh, okay.
April 2014, we kicked off with Do You Hear What I Hear? Nancy Anchules, owner and founder of Catalyst and Company, did an exercise with me on the air, and we asked you to see what you heard. It was a great example of how communication really matters when you're trying to get a message across. We then received an Affordable Care Act update from Steve Gerlach, attorney at Bernstein Shore, and he brought it home with all the changes that are really happening in that Affordable Care Act. We then finally ended the month with Maine DOL update from a good friend of mine, Jean Parquette, Commissioner of the Department of Labor, and Julia Rabinowitz, Director of Communication at the DOL here in Maine. They really gave a great update as to what was happening with the Maine Department of Labor. We then went into Maine 2014. We brought back Peter Lowe. He talked about locker room antics, and this had to do with the Miami Dolphins scandal. This was great information that you could bring back and really take away as to how it could happen in your organization. Then we spoke about investigation strategy and Title IX, and we brought in Naomi Butterfield and Kai McGinty from the law firm Bernstein Shore. And they talked about really making sure that your investigation strategy is solid before you make it happen and how sometimes bringing in a third party really makes a difference. And certainly, if you're in a school district, you wanted to hear the update about Title IX. We ended the month with how to be an HR influencer. And we spoke to Betty Francis, national speaker and VP of Human Resources at Wilmington Trust Company. She's also the chairwoman for the board of directors for the National SHRM organization. And she really talked about how important it is for HR professionals to get out there and be an influence, not only in their organization, but in the community. She had this to say about how to make that happen.
Well, first of all, I see it as a building block that every single one of us needs. And it's probably important to point out that while we're focusing on HR professionals right now, there are many professions that struggle with the ability to influence. So it's really an important life skill as well as a professional skill. And I think the definitions, they've been working on the definition or reviewing the definition really for thousands of years. I mean, as far back as Plato was even thinking about the definition of influencing. So we continue to find ways to influence others in order to make our point and obviously achieve an objective. We're not talking about manipulating. We're not talking about intimidating. We're really talking about connecting. Now, there's probably, I'm sure there are plenty of books and courses and things that you can read about where the influencing approach has a tendency to focus on manipulative tactics or techniques or even leveraging power relationships. But I think there's actually a book out there, Real Influence, and written by Mark Goldston and John Ullman, and they actually call that approach disconnected influence. And I don't think that type of influence works in the long term. So I think what we want to focus on as professionals is seeking ways to influence people getting to know what they want to achieve, what drives them, what they're worried about.
Bloober.
Make.
Okay, you're supposed to turn that off when you come into the studio or on vibrate.
Oops. We went to the last month of 2014, and we started with Notice, Lead, and Disrupt. National speaker, Dr. Jackie Freiberg, Author of the book Nuts talked about how to notice, lead, and disrupt in your organization. She had this to say about how to make that happen and succeed.
Innovation, as I said a few moments ago, and I'm going to say it a lot throughout our interview today, and I said it in Maine at the convention, innovation is everyone's job. And you said it really well in saying it's not about creating a committee. And I think we've seen this if we look back in time over history of the big movements within organizations. Remember when total quality management was the buzz?
Oh, I remember.
And then
that,
it became reengineering that was the buzz. And then it became, leadership or excellence. And what tends to happen is when we come up with programs like total quality management, the executive team will say, you know what? We believe it. We are committed to this, and you know what? We're going to do it. And so they go into the organization, and they go to the quality guy. And typically back then, it was the quality guy. They'd go to that team, and they'd say, okay, you guys go do quality, and good luck. But we're committed to it. And I don't think that's what innovation is. I don't think that's what quality is. I think what we have to do as a leadership team is we have to commit to innovation. But if you look at the most innovative companies in the world today, what you will find is the executives do more than commit to it. They actually spend time rolling up their sleeves and doing something to get involved in it as well. So in order for innovation to become deeply rooted in any organization, large, medium, small, for-profit, not-for-profit, we have to have senior leaders who are committed and a big capital A, capital N, capital D, and involved in it. Not every day, not all the time, but they have to at least be in it enough to understand what people are going through, to feel issues that are challenges for innovation, not always just to fix it.
Blooper.
That just sounds ridiculous, doesn't it? I couldn't get to it. I just made shit up as I went through. All right.
All right, so Keith Mullen.
Then we're going to be talking. That was too much. We then went into the remaining part of the year with a couple of great final shows. We talked to Kelly Szymanski from WEX, Gene McGinnis from the Maine Center of Creativity, and they talked about a new training program having to do with developing creative intelligence. We then spoke to Fran LeFevre. And she's with the Letty Group. And we talked about the topic of icky, sticky people problems. It was a funny, yet very informative show that really, if you listened carefully, could make a real difference in the way you approach these types of situations that happen every day. We ended the show's year with a final guest. It's Susan Bates from Bates Communication. And she talked about the science of influence. She's created a breakthrough scientific tool for executive presence assessment, and I think that it was an interesting assessment and something that you should look at. So as we end the second year of the HR Power Hour with today's show, I am so pleased that you have joined me on this two-year journey, that HR Power Hour continues to grow each and every month, that you're listening out there. Thank you for the feedback. Thank you for the kind words. Thank you to all the sponsors. But the reality is, without our listeners, we wouldn't be doing this. I also want to have a special thank you to my producer, Debbie Davis, who sits in the chair across from me and keeps me in line. So I want to thank her very much for another great year. So we're off to the next third year of the HR Power Hour. We have some great guests coming. We'll bring more information to you and make your lives easier as an HR professional or business leader. And stay tuned for our next show next week.